Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and all this week here on Family Talk, we have been recognizing the sanctity of human life. Today on the program, we are airing the second half of Dr. Dobson's conversation with Gianna Jessen and Jill Klopfenstein. Gianna is a survivor of a late-term saline abortion, and Jill is the adoptive mother of Zachary, a little boy whose homeless mother, who was a drug addict, went to the hospital to give birth to him, but instead, the doctor performed a barbaric procedure on him with the intent of ending his life instead of preserving it. Both of these women played a vital role in the United States Supreme Court decision to uphold the ban on so-called partial birth abortion that was passed in 2003. Their cases were presented in a brief to the Supreme Court and no doubt had an influence on the decision in this case. Now, of course, that law did not eradicate all abortions, but it did stop the horrific and dangerous procedure called partial birth abortion, and no doubt that has saved the lives of thousands of babies. Both Gianna and Zachary live full and rich lives today, but every day they have to deal with the disabilities caused by this evil practice. Now, that was a bit of a recap of yesterday's conversation. We will pick it up again at this point right here today. Here now is Dr. Dobson with Gianna Jessen and Jill Klopfenstein on today's edition of Family Talk.
Gianna, it is just amazing how the Lord is using you and others who will let him take their disabilities and his shortcomings, because we all have them. And yeah, we all have a whole list of them. I could tell you mine. You can probably see them. But how disabled are you?
Well, I have this limp, and just a limp, really. I have no physical pain.
Yeah.
I fall sometimes, and sometimes I fall with absolute grace, and sometimes not at all. And in those moments, I really do call on Jesus, and I ask him to kind of teach me, what is this about right now? There's something to learn in this affliction, and I want to know what it is. And here's what I've learned. This is, if we let him transform us through our suffering, if we almost embrace it, then our joy grows. It doesn't diminish, you know.
Gianna, do you ever indulge yourself in self-pity?
Yeah. There are days that I say, Lord, I want to be seen. I want to be seen as a, I don't want to be seen as a woman with a disability. I want to be seen as a woman.
Sure.
And I am, but not by most men in this culture, in this world that we're now living in, that worships perfection. And they have to grow to see that there's something that we can offer through our imperfections.
Gianna, when you were here 13 years ago, I told you, you had the beauty of Jesus on your face, and you do, and you still do.
Thank you.
And you've had it for a long time. And people can see it, and they can sense it. And you really do love him, don't you?
I know him.
Yeah. You know, there's still a lot of people out there that tell you that late-term abortions like this do not happen. They deny it. They deny that partial birth abortion really even takes place. And because the state or the country does not require that partial birth abortions be reported, people have been able to deny that it even happens at all. But we know that it does. And Gianna is living proof of that here today. So, do you know that I have been criticized for my applauding the Supreme Court for striking down this one method of killing babies? It didn't get rid of all abortion. I regret that. But why would we not celebrate the fact that no baby can now be legally killed.
I don't understand that.
In partial birth abortion.
I don't understand. You know, I'm in favor of all abortion being, gone as well. But
take what you can
get. What a victory. What a victory.
Jill, I'd like you to tell us what Zachary did when he found out how the court had ruled.
When that decision came down from the Supreme Court, Zachary, people were calling us, congratulating us, and Zachary would answer the phone and he'd say, "Yeah, I won my case at the Supreme Court." Just so childlike. It was
Zachary said that.
Oh, yes. He answers the phone and he says, "Yeah, I won my case at the Supreme Court." Just nonchalant. Like it was expected. Oh, I want to live my life like that. Mm-hmm. I want to live my life like that. It's expected. All our prayers are answered.
I said this in a statement the day after that decision was released. That, and I hope this doesn't sound political, but it's really highly, highly personal, that these little children who have been subjected to the greatest brutality that can be imposed on a child. I mean, I don't want to, upset our listeners.
Sometimes we need to be upset.
Well, I think so. And just as partial birth abortion has been legal for all these years because of one man, President Bill Clinton, who vetoed the bill that would have banned partial birth abortion twice and was about to do it a third time, and it was withdrawn. Just as one man allowed it to continue, and he has blood on his hands today, another man, George W. Bush, has been instrumental in banning it, I hope, forever. Mm-hmm. We've been fighting this for a long, long time, and it has happened now. Why wouldn't we celebrate?
I think the thing that I'm most concerned about is, as far as our culture, and even among Christians, is to make sure that we keep feeling and don't grow cold. Yeah. Because now the arguments that you used to hear, it's a baby, it's a baby, it's a baby. We know it's a baby. We know.
Ultrasound has done that.
Medical science, they're doing all kinds of stuff to help children in the womb, where in the very same hospital, they're ending life and calling it a right. Well, if abortion is merely about women's rights, then what were mine?
Did you see that photograph that I put in one of my letters?
Yes.
Where they were doing surgery on an unborn child. And the surgeon was working on that. It had opened the womb and was working on that baby. And that little child's hand was grasped around the finger of the surgeon. I'm telling you, that I haven't gotten over that one. So, well, if you love life, then you must have been involved in the struggles of the last since 1973, when it occurred. Gianna, some people will not have heard the program yesterday. You're doing fine. You're speaking all around the world. And you've, of all things, have been running marathons.
Yeah.
Now, you walk with a limp.
Yes.
How have you run marathons?
You pray a lot and you train really hard. And you run and run and run. But it was interesting. I run for two reasons. One is to share the gospel without words. You just run.
Yeah.
And then the other is to learn things, to speak to the places inside of myself that haven't healed.
Yeah.
I ran the first one to teach myself that to be different is not to be not beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And because I couldn't even watch myself run in a reflection, because I thought, is this repulsive?
Oh,
is this?
No.
But these are
beautiful.
But these are the honest thoughts. This is not a comfortable journey. It's a beautiful one, but you have to face things squarely. And it was just about that time that the Lord showed me a Spurgeon, Charles Spurgeon, commentary on a scripture verse. And guess what the scripture verse was? Mm. I will save her that halteth or limps.
Oh,
Zephaniah 3:19. And I was like, really? And the commentary was written in the 1800s, and it says all the people will see this lame woman running the race and winning the crown.
Oh, goodness.
And they will say, how does this lame woman run the race and win the crown? And they will all say, it is due to almighty grace. And the commentary was on that scripture, I will save her that limps, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I have lived on that, and I run and I run and I run.
How long does it take you, Gianna, to run 26.4 miles?
Well, it takes, the first time it took me 7.5 hours, and I ran the London Marathon by the grace of God last year, and I had an injury on top of my cerebral palsy, so that took me 8 hours and
Were
20 minutes.
Were people cheering for you as you
No,
came by?
They mostly go home.
Do they? And you're still out there.
Right, and so they, but it's such an interesting and emotional. There were a few there. I should say there were a few. But I do it to feel that. To feel, you know, the last shall be first. Mm-hmm. You know, to live that. And to, like, this is the way that I encounter Christ. He was there. They had taken they were starting to take the signs down and telling me to get off.
The cameras were all gone.
I don't do it for that.
The press was gone.
Yeah,
what a story is unfolding here, and there's nobody there to see it.
No, but it was fantastic. And I remember the police, they were telling me to get off the road. It was time to open the roads, and I'm a spunky little thing, and I slammed my fist on the van, and I said, you listen to me. I have fought to run this race. I will run the race marked out for me, and you will not kick me out of my race, and I'm going to run until that finish line. I'm going to do it.
Gianna, what would you say to little Zachary? Someday you'll have a chance to talk to him in a more mature way.
Yeah.
But what will you say to him when you have a chance?
I would say to him what I recently said to a little boy in England, who was 12 with cerebral palsy as well. And I know Zachary has a different case, but I looked at him, this little boy in England, and he was wondering why his twin brother was getting all of the attention and able to play rugby, and why was he having to fight and in such a different way and learn lessons of rejection that, you know, all these different things, you know, which I pray will be different for Zachary, but he will have a different journey. But all of these lessons that he's learning today are to develop the man he is to become.
Gianna, you have not had a relationship with your biological mother at all, have you?
No, but we did meet last year.
For the first time.
Mm.
You're 30 years of age, and you just met last year.
Mm.
How did it happen?
I say this carefully and also mindful of the many women that will be listening who have had abortions, who find it difficult to listen to this broadcast today.
Yeah.
I have forgiven my biological mother, and I think that's important for those women to hear.
Mm. Are those words, or do you mean it?
No, I do. I do mean it, yeah. But I was subjected to a very horrendous experience last year. I was speaking to a bunch of kids, and I had spoken all day, and I was greeting people at the end, and it was at the very end that a woman came up and said, "I am your mother," and basically deal with it.
What
and
a
you,
shock.
I mean, you had
no preparation for it at all. Did she hug you?
Actually, she just was filled with rage and hate. And I immediately began to pray and in my head. And I said, "You must need to hear me tell you that I forgive you for what you have done." And didn't want forgiveness. And just scream. I can't even remember all the words. Just so much hate that I knew this was not God.
Mm.
Yeah. And I kept saying to myself, I am a little princess, and I will respond that way.
Gianna, can you, in some ways, look inside of her and realize that that hate has a cause, has a source?
Yes.
Inside, she has been wounded by life herself.
Right.
If we could have followed her through her journey, we probably would understand, not excuse, but understand the pain that she has been through.
Yes, but I think the thing that I felt the most was still such a level of disrespect for my very life. Yeah. Mm. And I just want to be left alone, to live my life. And when you have such an enormous story, everybody wants it to end beautifully and wants everything to go just to make us feel fantastic. But there is a part of this story that, because for years I said I didn't want to meet her, and it wasn't out of anger or rage, but it was just...
You didn't know you could deal with it.
Or just, I'm living my life, and just because there are millions of people who are adopted in the United States of America, and they all don't want to meet their biological parents. So it's, you know, it's not an unusual thing, but because I had such an unusual birth, there was a tremendous amount of misunderstanding of, well, why, you know, you must not forgive her. You know, but I gave it to her. I gave her that forgiveness. And eventually I had to stand up and say, I won't allow you to treat me in this way.
At one point in your past, the law said you could be killed in a brutal way. And everyone involved with you wanted that to happen. And you survived. You are one unusual lady. And here you sit 30 years later with a smile on your face, testifying to the love of Christ. Jill, did I read correctly that after Zachary was born, he was not given any oxygen? He was not ministered to in any way?
No.
He was not given medical care?
Right.
And he was just left there. They wrapped him in a blanket?
Right.
And left him to die.
For 7 days, he lay in an isolette with a sticker on his isolette saying, comfort care only. That means you do not give... No oxygen, no nourishment. They finally started
giving. How can God not judge this nation?
Oh.
I don't understand it. When you have these vulnerable children with no voice to beg for their own lives, and we have no compassion, do not care,
right.
Do not feed, do
well,
not
the doctor
medicate.
that birthed him, he was born on a Friday evening, and so the doctor was off the weekend, came in Monday morning, and saw that this child was still alive, and he says, well, I guess he's not going to die. We're going to have to find a home for him. I mean,
and that's
how
when
cold.
Called you.
Wow. And that's when we were called.
Talk
well,
about how precious that little boy is. Tell us what he means to you and in your heart.
He's everything. He's... When he was born, he had to spend 5 weeks at Children's Hospital to drain the blood off the brain caused by the needle at birth. Yeah. What had happened is it ruptured the lining, so it pushed the brain against the skull. And for 5 weeks, well, I took him there, and I was there for 3 days. And the nurse came in, and she said, CAT scans are looking good. He's got brain matter, but he's going to be here for a very long time. And we had 3 children at home. And she said, you have to go home and take care of your other kids. I thought, how in the world do I do that? I can't leave a baby in a hospital. It took me 3 times walking down the hall to leave him. And I was there every day. I missed 2 days because of snow. And then those days I'd call, and they'd put the phone up to his ear. And the nurses said, he anticipates your arrival, because I always came around 10 a.m. And when I called and he heard my voice, he responded to that. He was 3 weeks old at this time. He had a drain in his head to drain the blood, pretty much non-responsive to a lot of things, but he knew who his mother was. Now, come on, how can you tell me what he means to me? It's, I mean, he's my child. The medical profession said he's going to live a worthless life. Well, it's pretty filled.
they talk about the quality of life.
Yes.
As though that's something that's decided by us instead of
by
God.
The person living it.
People don't seem to realize. I think it's so arrogant for people who have no physical affliction or adversity to determine what my quality of life is.
Yeah.
When in fact it's because of my adversity that my life has been enriched. Mm-hmm. And if I honestly can look at all of you here and say, I would never wish today for God to remove my adversities.
Gianna, do you mean that?
I mean it.
Do you really mean that?
I really,
all things work together for the good of those
yes,
that love
I
the
mean
Lord
that.
And called
and
according
because
to his purpose.
I see him.
Yeah.
I find him in that adversity. Abraham Lincoln said, always bear in mind that your own resolution to succeed is more important than any other thing. All rising to a great place is by a winding stair. And look at how he suffered and suffered and suffered in his own life. And yet, look at the plan that God had for him to bring freedom to so many people. And, you know, I just feel like I wish I could articulate the joy that you receive through adversity. There are things I wish wouldn't have to happen at times at the same time. You know, I don't just enjoy pain, but I see God in the middle of it, and he's so close when he's helping me to endure.
You know, and looking at the value of life at a parent's standpoint, when I was in nursing, I took care of a 22-year-old that had the function of a 6-month-old. That was really hard. Huge man. And you had to do everything for him. But when you walked into the room, his face would light up. And he was so happy to see you. It's just like seeing a 6-month-old. I mean, and it brings so much joy to you. So value. Whose value? They bring value to our life.
Yeah, you know, during my training, I did an internship at Pacific State Hospital, which is a hospital for those who are mentally disabled, and it was given another name then, which is no longer politically correct, so I won't even say it. It's now called Lannerman State Hospital out in California. There were 3,000 children there who had mental disabilities, 3,000 of them. And I saw the value and worth of those children. They could not cross a street without help. They couldn't tell the difference between a red light and a green light. They couldn't make change. They were valuable human beings. And I came to love them and to know them. And that's where my sensitivity, I think, came to children who have additional challenges to deal with. And I'll never forget them and some of the conversations that I had with them.
I know that I'm not yet a mother, but I see my life in those days. I see them clearly now when I marry Mr. Braveheart. And I think about it and I think, gosh, you know, what a fantastic mother I will be because I have suffered.
Yeah.
And what lessons I'll be able to, when I fall down on the floor or whatever, and I have little sons, for example, or even a little girl, the things I can teach that little boy, see, now you don't have to bear my burden, but let me show you how you can love and honor women well and be tender to them.
What beautiful words of wisdom expressed by a woman who was almost a victim of a so-called partial birth abortion. Thank God that procedure has now been outlawed in the United States, but of course, the fight for life is far from over. You've been listening to a classic broadcast of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, featuring the guests Gianna Jessen and Jill Klopfenstein. I'm Roger Marsh, and if you would like to learn more about the fight for life, One great place to start is your local pregnancy resource center, because they are often on the front lines in this battle. Now, at drjamesdobson.org, we have a comprehensive list of the pregnancy resource centers and pregnancy resource clinics all over the country that'll help you get started. Now, if this story has brought something home to you that you're struggling with, we encourage you to give us a call. We would love to talk with you. We're here to pray with you. Our phone number is easy to remember. It's 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. We also have a link on our broadcast page to help you find a trusted Christian counselor in your area. You'll also find a link at drjamesdobson.org. And be sure to come back again tomorrow when we conclude our week of broadcasts celebrating the sanctity of life. We'll see you then right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.